Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. We got Albert Breer here. I'm on my third cup of coffee because I was playing hurt yesterday, Albert. I don't know if you can see this on our Zoom screen right here. I got two PJ Masks Band-Aids on. I sliced the side of my knuckle off.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's just we don't have those lying around the same way we used to. I think we're getting past that point where my kids are wearing conventional Band-Aids now.
Yeah.
I was there once, and that looks painful. That's like a this is going to sound so stupid. Was it hard to type?
Yes. I'm not even joking. I was telling our editors yesterday, guys, that this is sports writer turf toe. It seems like a menial injury, but it is having a great effect on.
Brock Purdy's UCL.
Yeah, and let me tell you what. I removed all the bandages to write my columns yesterday and definitely was like bleeding on the keyboard. I left it all out there yesterday. Yeah. I'm just telling you.
All on the field.
I left it all out on the field just for you guys. I felt inspired because we're going to start with the Eagles and the 49ers. I felt inspired because everybody on the Eagles and the 49ers were given their all, including the team's director of security who was thrown out of the game yesterday.
Tom DeSandro.
So the funny
part is too, I don't know him very well, but I've obviously crossed paths with him a bunch over the course of my career. And he doesn't like attention. Even though you see him everywhere, he really tries to stay out of the spotlight. And so while everybody was having fun with it, I'm sure there are going to be t-shirts all over the link whenever they play at home again. I'd imagine this is probably making him massively uncomfortable.
100%. So we were talking about it in our group chat yesterday, and we were saying we should probably write about this. And I was telling one of my friends who's an Eagles fan, writing something vaguely critical about Big Dom made me more nervous for my own personal health and safety I've criticized presidents. I've criticized foreign governments. A lot of things where people could have a far easier way to come at me if they wanted to. But Big Dom, I was like, I don't know. I said to my wife, I was like, we're gonna have to keep an eye out for ourselves.
That dude legitimately knows where all the bodies are buried for that organization. Knows where all of them are.
You can't dress that way if you don't.
And he's been there through Andy Reid, Chip Kelly, Doug Peterson, Nick Sirianni, all the front office tumult, everything that's happened there. He's seen everything and he knows everything too. And so he's one of these guys where I'm with you, bud. I wouldn't want to cross him.
So let me throw my take off you and then we'll get into the game because I do think this is more interesting than the game. I covered the Jets when their strength and conditioning coach Sal Losey tripped a Dolphins player as a punt return gunner, which is
it was
2010. It was December of 2010.
Okay,
think about that. It was 3 weeks before they went.
That
on
was
that,
during like the
that playoff
one of the
run.
AFC. I forgot that was one. Yeah. Of, during one of the AFC title game runs.
It was 3 weeks before they went on an amazing run to the AFC title game. They lost their strength and conditioning coach. I went back and I watched the video of that. Holy crap. He put his foot out and tripped a Dolphins player running full speed on a sideline on brand new MetLife Stadium. That was
it was like a Woody Hayes move.
That, yeah. So I wanted to kind of get out ahead of it and say, like, I don't think this is that at all whatsoever. Mm-hmm. As a side note, by the way, I looked up Sal Alossi, the guy who tripped the Dolphins punt gunner. He then went to UCLA and got in a fight with Puff Daddy.
Puff Daddy?
P. Diddy Combs. Yeah.
Really? Puff Daddy.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
In like 2017. So
he was the strength coach at UCLA then.
And then
under what, like Jim Mora, maybe?
Jim Mora. And something led to an altercation with Sean P. Diddy Combs.
Wow.
Yeah, so just stepping in it, you know? It's a tough road to pave, you know?
It's like some high-profile incidents for a strength coach.
Some people live their lives anonymously. Some people fly a little close to the sun, and that's okay. But with Big Dom, I thought, okay, you're clearly against the rules. There's an NFL rule book, portion of the NFL rule book specifically for non-playing personnel that are on the field. He should have been on that part of the sideline. He's not allowed there. You can't touch another player. But I thought it was almost like the momentum of the play carried him there. You know, like I think if you're looking at it and trying to be reasonable, the momentum of the play carried you there. Somebody else grabbed a hold of Devonta Smith, and then he's looking over at the official like, are you going to get Dre Greenlaw out of here, or do you want me to do it? You know? And right. So he kind of just like stiff arms him a little bit, like a good bouncer. And then we get the little twap from Dre Greenlaw. And then all of a sudden everybody freaks out. I think that it was
my expert opinion. I still think that this was one of these fights that was never going to, there are fights that definitely could boil over. I still think watching that, like, it struck me as like the fight that was never going to boil over.
I don't think it was going to boil over. I do think that momentum carried him into the moment, though, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think we've all been there.
Yep.
And my one problem with it is, if you're the NFL, you can't not come down on both of them.
You have to. Yeah.
For two reasons. If you don't come down on Dre Greenlaw, what you're saying to all the personnel on the sidelines who are way undersized and undermanned, that we don't really care if someone comes out here and cold cocks one of you guys, you know, whatever, deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't come down on Big Dom, unfortunately, what you're saying to the players is it's okay that somebody else can put their hands on you, you know, on the sideline. And it's not. And it's just, it sucks because I do think it was a genuinely human moment. Yeah. But now we're in this spot where the NFL is between a rock and a hard place here.
I mean, and this was like a game that was sort of getting chippy anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't think like a moment like this, like if you had told me, when did it happen? Was it third quarter that it happened? Okay. So if you had told me like halfway through the second quarter, something's going to boil over and there's going to be pushing and shoving and someone might get thrown out, I would have been like, yeah, like that. It sort of feels like that. Like that. That's where this game might be going. Now, the fact that it involved someone who is not a player is what made it different, is what made it so new, like noteworthy. And, you know, I think, I mean, look, it's a violent game and things happen and emotions boil over. And I don't think in either case, in Dom DeSandro's case or in Dre Greenlaw's case, I don't think there was anything like premeditated.
No.
Or I think it was all just emotion and emotion boiling over. And if you're the NFL, you have to, you know, for the reasons you said, you have to come down on both of them and you have to have consequences for both of them. But I don't think you have to take it any further than that.
I tweeted and it ended up being, you know, incorrect. But if you're Kyle Shanahan, mm-hmm, in that moment, and I saw him on the other sideline and he's flipping out. He's like, yeah, well, then throw that guy out. He's like, you know, he touched my guy first. Throw him out too. If you're Kyle Shanahan, if you had that moment back, do you think about it and say, let me not advocate for the removal of a Philadelphia folk hero at Lincoln Financial Field in the middle of a game that I have to win in order to have a shot at the one seed? Like in that moment, I'm just like, if you're Kyle Shanahan, did you think, oh no, I just create, because remember,
well,
the Eagles, you know what sucks surged
about it for
after
Kyle
that
too. What sucks about it for Kyle too is like he's losing a player. On all due respect to Dom DeSandro, who plays a big role.
Hey.
People don't understand how important his role is, yes, in that organization. It is very important. But on game day, it is not as important as a starting linebacker. Like, so I like the, I think Kyle probably felt like, I'm getting screwed here. They're losing their security guy. I'm losing like my Pro Bowl linebacker. Like, that's not an even trade, you know? So I think that that would probably be what be on my mind if I was Kyle more than anything else, more than getting the crowd fired up because Dom DeSandro is, you know, leaving. And I was waiting to see if he'd motion to the crowd at all, and he didn't. So
no, he handled it the right way.
He handled it the right way, but he could have really got that crowd going if he had wanted to.
Now, the only other person I'm thinking about today is Roger Goodell, and I do think it's funny that we already know exactly who. I mean, I've seen it written about 10 times already, and sometimes the NFL is not that expedited at handing out information or confirming information, but we know the name of the person who is in charge of this case. We know exactly who is going to have to go to Dom and suspend him to his face, and it's not the commissioner. And if I'm Roger Goodell, I'm like, yeah, hey, Mike, over there in that office down the hallway, would you do something for me just real quick? I got a couple meetings. Would you go over to the 6'5 Eagles security guard that weighs like 330 pounds and is a ball of submarine muscle and just tell him he's not going to be able to be on the sideline for the rest of the year? Could you just go handle that for me? You know, a guy who could make you disappear in a cocaine heartbeat. Yeah, go. Why don't you go just take care of that? And I'll be over here because, again, I got some lunch meetings. And I feel like that is, you know, discipline. Like, there's guys that I would never want to handle discipline for. Dom is got to be number one on that list.
Dom would be very high on that list for me as well.
What were your takeaways from the actual game? Because I do think that I was talking to an Eagles fan friend of mine, and he brought up a good point, which is that he wanted to come out of this win or loss with a clean game, with a game that wasn't chippy, because with the knowledge that you're probably going to see them again, and you want the emotion to be removed from it the third time that you guys face each other in this sort of Rocky III climax, which we're going to get in the playoffs. I don't think there's any doubt. These teams are on a collision course for one another. But I think what happened is it almost doubled down. The 49ers wore all black to this game. Debo, every time he scored, he was taunting the crowd. You know, this was one of those moments where I thought, okay, if there was any interest on either side in just making the third installment of this rematch normal, nobody wanted to do it. These guys hate each other, and San Francisco comes out with a major, major blow to the solar plexus here.
It's great because, like, I mean, I grew up with rivalries, like the cross-division rivalries of teams that would always play in the playoffs. Like, I feel like that's what San Francisco and Dallas was when I was a kid, you know. And I guess more recently you had, like, New England and Indianapolis, and that probably wasn't quite as nasty. New England and Denver then, of course, you know, that'd be another one where the teams just seem to play each other all the time. And you know, I think that the familiarity fuels a lot of this. My biggest takeaway, Connor, is that the Niners have the highest ceiling of any team in the league, and it might not be close.
I agree.
Like, they looked borderline unstoppable. I thought I like the second and third quarters of that game, they completely outclassed an Eagles team that was resilient, that was tough, that was balanced, that was strong, like all of that stuff. The Niners just completely took them into deep water and suffocated them, you know? Yeah. And what's amazing about it to me was I was talking to, you know, Brock Purdy about it after the game. And it was just like, you talk about one player and then it's the next player and then it's the next player. And it's like, you know, I asked him about Debo after the catch and he had the two long touchdowns. And then I asked him about Kittle, who like kind of got the momentum going for them at the beginning of the second quarter with that play where, you know, he chipped Hassan Reddick, slowed Hassan Reddick down, leaked into the flat, and then outran everybody for like 30 yards. And then it's like McCaffrey, who's like running behind Trent Williams over and over and over again. And it's just they have so many answers. And I haven't even brought up Brandon Ayuk, who might be the best pure receiver on the team.
Yeah.
And then on the defense, it's, you know, I mean, they hit Jalen Hurts, I believe, 9 times. Almost knocked him out of the game. And you think about like how deep they are in pass rushers, Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, Javon Hargrave, like where's Chase Young? Well, I know hasn't lived up to expectations, but was he at their fourth or fifth best defensive lineman? You know, It's crazy. And it's just as good as the Eagles are. And I think the Eagles are really, really good. I don't know that they have the ceiling that the Niners do. It's just, you know, like the Niners look to me like a team that when they're really rolling, it's very difficult to keep up with them.
I don't think, you know, and I don't know whether you would argue that the Eagles past couple of weeks had anything to do with it. There's certainly probably an exhaustion factor to that when you have to come from behind in two really emotional games against two really good teams. We'll see how they are, because now you have Dallas in prime time next week. And I don't know, do you expect the Eagles to recover in time for something like this? Or is this the inevitable, you know, every team's going to face attrition. The Eagles weren't going to go through the season with one loss. I mean, I could see them being a 3 or a 4 or 5 loss team and still doing really well in the playoffs. I don't think it really matters all that much as long as you get into the tournament, but I could see them losing to Dallas next week too.
Yeah, and like that's kind of where I think trouble could creep in. You know, I think I've had it like marked down for like 3 weeks that like the first round of the playoffs, we were going to get Dallas like traveling to the NFC South champion, you know, whoever that is, in the 4 or 5 game. And, you know, if Dallas wins Sunday, they pull even. And now all of a sudden the Eagles, who will certainly, you know, I think feel the effects of having played those 4 games in a row, right? And, oh, by the way, they played Dallas before their bye on the other end of that. You know, their margin for error will be completely gone. Now, I believe they still have the tiebreaker, right? Like, even if they lose Sunday, they still have the tiebreaker. But it's a much different path having to go on the road, you know? And, yes, you get the NFC South champion in the first round, but that's different than, all right, we got to go on the road in round one, then we got to go on the road in round two, we got to go on the road in round three. Whereas if, you know, you're, say, the number 2 seed behind San Francisco, you get all home games up until the NFC title game, or you're the 1 seed because you get past the Niners, and now all of a sudden you're at home the whole playoffs.
You know, I was watching the Thursday night football game, and you mentioned getting these guys in space. I was watching Thursday night football, and when DK Metcalf gets the ball and he gets behind the defense and watching him run at full speed, I think he hit like 22 miles an hour in that game, right?
It was terrifying seeing how fast he was running on that play. Like, can you imagine that running at you?
What would someone have to pay you? Honestly, like what's your dollar amount? And you get to put pads on, you get to put a helmet on, you just got to take it. What's your dollar amount?
I'd do it for 6 figures, I think.
6 figures.
Because then I could just outright, like, so we're looking at like new cars now, because we're a family of 5, like you kind of like are in the Tahoe tier. Okay. So like for like a free Tahoe, I think I would do it. And Tahoes can go for almost 6 figures now.
You would do it just for the free Tahoe.
Maybe.
Hot damn.
Would you?
I would need.
But let me get this straight. I'm in pads, right? Like, it's not no pads.
You're in pads.
So this is like a Jackass scenario. Like, do you remember, there was that episode of Jackass where the guy, he went to USC football practice.
Yes.
And fielded the punt.
Yes. Yeah. And then there's another one too, where he had, didn't Johnny Knoxville have, an NFL kicker, kicking footballs, like I think into his groin.
I think that might be right. Yeah.
I mean, those guys did it for a lot less than a Tahoe. Some of them, but so I would need, okay. I would need the cost of the Tahoe plus medical expenses related to, cause you got to figure you're going to get knocked out. I would need, and you might break a bone. So I would like the bone set. I would like the rehab paid for. I would like a case of Russell Wilson concussion water and then my Tahoe on top of it.
Can you imagine explaining it to your doctors? What happened to you? Well,
buddy, if I got a story for you.
Huh?
Yeah, if I got a story for you, DK Metcalf was just running down the street. And you know what, too? It would need to be one of the, I would want the sport package. Because that's where
No. I think you'd have to get like the upper level trim, right?
Like the blackout wheels, you know? Yeah. I'm not doing, you know. I'm not doing it for a cassette.
You have to go like again, like that upper trim level where it's like, you know, the like the doors open when they sense you're like within 15 yards of the car. Yeah.
Heated seats, remote start. You know, I don't want to get into a cold car in the winter, but this is a long way of saying I saw DK Metcalf running the same thing that you just mentioned. The thought that popped into my mind that there's no chance that I want this to get in the way of this guy. The 49ers have four of those guys, right? And they have an offense that, I mean, ask any coach, what is Kyle Shanahan's greatest trait? It is putting playmakers in open space and giving them room to run. He does it better than any coach in the NFL, and it's not close. And so, you know, lost in that game last night is the fact that, you know, 8 minutes left in the second quarter, you have this clear out play to George Kittle. George Kittle's like your fourth offensive weapon, and that guy is an absolute anvil. Brandon Ayuk, you know, we praise him a lot for his speed and his route running. That guy hits like a sledgehammer, you know? Mm-hmm. And that is what matters in September or in January.
Right.
I think, you know, that's when the NFL playoffs are in January. That's what matters, you know, is you're destroying someone's will so consistently.
Yeah. When everybody's body's broken down and tired and beaten up and it's 20 degrees out, who wants to tackle who? Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a lot of what it comes down to. And when you've got all these guys in space, like Deebo Samuel is built like Emmett Smith. You know what I mean? Like, so you have Deebo Samuel running in the open field and you have George Kittle. And like, you think about like that play, you know, that we've brought up a couple times now to Kittle where he leaked out and he ran, you know, again, picked up, I think it was 32 yards. Like, watch him block Hassan Reddick on that play. Like, he comes out of the backfield, comes in motion across and just lights Hassan Reddick up. And he's able to kind of take Hassan Reddick out of the play, then leak off of him and just be wide open where he's supposed to be in the flat. So he's effectively taken a pass rusher out of the play and then become the receiver on the play. And they have guys like this across the board who they can move around, who they can do multiple things with. It's just, you know, and Brock Purdy's playing really well, but it's almost it's difficult to tell how good Brock Purdy really is. He's leading the NFL in pass rating. He's leading the NFL in completion percentage. I believe he's fourth in touchdowns and seventh in yards. And it's almost hard to tell how good he is just because of how good everything is around him.
Yeah. All right. There were some other games here, unfortunately. I wrote this week about how terrible the NFL is right now. It's just bad. And I do think we're on it. We're on a convergence of a few events, right? Where we have a lot of quarterback injuries. We have a lot of rookie starters. We're in a defensive counter evolution year, which always is a big hiccup. And I remember that in like maybe 2016 or 2017, we had one of those where we were talking about the death of NFL offenses. And then Sean McVay and the Chiefs and the Rams scored 900 points on.
Well, there was that year Sunday night game. There was that year where it was Mahomes' rookie year where the Chiefs really started doing all the – and it was with Alex Smith at quarterback where they started to put in a lot of the spread stuff. And that was the year – that was McVay's first year in L.A.
Right.
And that was where it sort of – so it was 17.
So from that point on, you know, you have it from 17 to basically to 22. I mean, you had a good run, and defenses are going to catch up, which they have. And now we're in a situation where – everything's got to run its course. But I do think that there is a general fatigue, right? Like, we've now got we've got the 17 game season. The television schedule and the way that the games were dispersed this year was awful. I thought it was a shame for players. A lot of teams, a lot of guys operating on short rest consistently. Mm-hmm. I think you have some organizations in the NFL that aren't taking care of their players. You know, I think you have some teams who are sitting on the tarmac for 2 hours after a game, you know, when they should already be home and rested and, you know, in an ice bath, you know, and I do think that that's still going on. And then you have the turf issue, you know,
I don't want to go off on a tangent about this, but I do think that there's a point of critical mass here too, you know, like where it's like all of these decisions that were made with the almighty dollar in mind. And look, the players deserve the players made some of those decisions too. You know, sure. Like part of it was
decreased practice time.
Yeah. I mean, part of it was like what they bargained away. And, you know, there's this kind of, I don't know, we could get into a huge long discussion about it, but it's basically like the NFL owners are operating in a way. It's like they've taken on the spirit of David Tepper. Like they are operating like a hedge fund right now, where it's like,
yeah,
every last dollar I can get, I'm going to get. And that was like sort of the mandate for Roger Goodell when he was hired. He was seen as a guy who can maximize profits. That's what he's doing. And so he's following his mandate. The owners have no problem going along with all of that at every turn. And so when it's, well, can we do more short weeks? Can we add a 13th or 14th playoff team? Can we add a 17th game? It's okay. Like, so what do we have to give back to the players to get that? Oh, you want to turn the lights off for another 5 weeks in the off season? Sure.
Yeah.
You want to take away double sessions in the summer? Go do it.
Yeah.
You want to put restrictions on contact? Fine. And part of it is because on the flip side of it, the union is controlled by older players. Who do those rules protect?
Older players.
Older players who don't need the practice time, right? It protects them and helps. It helps extend their careers, but and it extends their careers. It also makes it more difficult for young players to develop, which means they might get an extra year or two on the back end. The problem is, once those players start to wash out of the league, what are you left with? A bunch of guys who weren't developed the way that those older guys were developed.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's a big, long discussion to be had here about all this, about how they bargained away all the work time. And football is a sport that takes work, you know?
Yeah.
They bargained away all the work time. They've bastardized the first month of the season. So this is what we're seeing every year now, where everybody's just trying to figure crap out over the first month of the season because they haven't had enough work. And I think when you get to the back end of the season, now you get guys who are beat up, who haven't taken care of themselves the way, or calloused themselves the same way they have in the past. And they're on all kinds of short weeks and playing on Black Friday. And like, what do you expect to happen? You know, like there's a reason why this sport was always played once a week.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why, like, there's a reason why, like your kid, if your kid plays tackle football, he plays once a week. But he might be cramming three or four soccer or lacrosse or hockey games into a week, right?
Right. Yeah. I do think, I mean, the critical mass thing is interesting to me. And, you know, the one thing I'll add to that is, you know, with gambling, we have sort of invited in this class of subhuman that feels like it's okay to just scream at these guys on social media. And let's be real. When players go into the locker room at halftime, some of them check their phones. Like it's a thing.
Yep.
I mean, they look at their social media. It's part of our life. It's omnipresent. And what those guys are faced with on a daily basis, mm-hmm. just, you know, like tweet like, oh, game day. And then like the first 90 comments are like, I'm going to show up at your house with an axe because you lost my fantasy football. And, you know, and then that's in the back of your mind. Like, okay, yeah. Is this guy really going to come to my house with an axe? Probably not, but maybe, you know, stuff's ridiculous. And so mentally, are you even ready to play on 4 days rest? Physically, forget about it. But anyway, I wrote that while I was watching the Patriots and the Chargers because I just felt like that game was an affront to humanity. And the same thing with the Falcons and the Jets. There were 6 penalties in 8 plays in the Falcons and Jets game.
I mean, God bless, because you live in the Northeast just like I do. God bless the fans who actually were out there at those games.
Why?
On Sunday. I mean, for people who don't live here, it was like the worst kind of weather, like worse than snow, right? I would say, like, what's worse than snow, I feel like if you're attending a sporting event, what's worse than snow is like when it's just not cold enough to snow.
Yeah.
When it's like 35 degrees and raining.
Yeah.
That is objectively worse than 25 and snowing. And that's what you had on Sunday. And that's what that's what people sat through to watch Falcons Jets on Sunday and sat through to watch Chargers Patriots on Sunday.
Just.
And I think sat through to some degree, not the same with the temperature, but I mean, the Commanders and the Dolphins, right, would be another yeah. one. Although yeah. that was entertaining if you're a Dolphins fan.
Sure.
You know, I like Eagles Niners was in the same environment, but not quite the not quite in the same category, I would say. I wouldn't give those fans quite the same credit for showing up as I would the people in the other places.
Yeah, there's something aesthetically pleasing about the snow. You think like, oh, this is fun. You know, I'm doing this. It's the holidays, you know, but it's just rain and blackness. And, you know, you're at Foxborough and the only thing that you're hearing is the sound of that lighthouse foghorn. And you're just like, you're just miserable. You just want to go home and wrap yourself in a Snuggie.
And even though there are only 25,000 people at the game, traffic's still going to be abysmal on the way out.
And the line at Dunkin's going to be terrible.
That's right.
Everybody's going to try to get to Dunkin'. Packers-Chiefs, I guess, if you're asking me what you think is the second most interesting game this weekend,
yeah,
just because I thought that, okay, here we are, and we've seen the data with Jordan Love, and I think anyone that was paying attention saying, oh, this guy's awful, he's trash, he's not going to replace Aaron Rodgers, he was almost identical in terms of statistics. Mm-hmm. If you go game by game with Rodgers' development, and now he's at the point where he was doing all the cool stuff he was doing in the preseason in games. Oh, weird. The running game looks better. AJ Dillon, who was lost, is now averaging over 4 yards a carry. You know, he's got a 118 quarterback rating. Let me look at this. Romeo Dobbs, Christian Watson, Dontavian Wicks, Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 receivers with 3+ receptions and at least 10 receiving yards yesterday.
And all of them were first or second year players, I believe. Is that right? All of them. So look, I love watching the Packers right now. The Packers are up there with like the Texans on like my must watch list.
Yeah.
I think what Matt LaFleur and the Packers are doing is making everyone else or 90% of people developing young quarterbacks look like freaking morons.
Yeah.
And I can still remember having this conversation with Matt over the summer, and he wasn't, you know, I've known him a long time, and he's, you know, I feel like he's pretty honest when it comes to, you know, his global thoughts on the game and coaching and all of that different stuff. And I asked him, I said, do you think that this, like in the end, like now, do you think that this is what was best for Jordan Love, was sitting 3 years after going through it and seeing where he is? And do you think that like really like this was the right thing to do? And he looked at me and he goes, this is how every quarterback should be developed. And it was such an honest moment. And it was he basically said, none of these kids are ready to play.
Yeah.
They come in and we're adjusting to them and we're dumbing things down and we're trying to make it work. And God forbid he doesn't have good players around him, because that's going to make it worse. And then he loses confidence. And then after he loses confidence, do you know at our level how hard it is to get confidence back when things are moving at the speed that they're moving? And then before you know it, the team that spent a first round pick on him is giving up on him. And then he's never going to get a shot to develop again because no one's made the investment in him that the first team made in him.
Yeah.
Right. And so like his whole point was no one's patient with these guys. And he's like, and in their impatience, a kid loses his confidence. And once he loses his confidence at that position, he's usually cooked. And I think like Jordan Love is such a great example of a guy who he has the confidence of his coaching staff. They've stuck with him. The locker room believes in him because they've seen him grow and they've seen him take steps over the years and they've seen it from start to finish. And this isn't like a, oh crap, this kid's going into the game. It's like, no, we know how much work he's put in. We know what's gone into it. Like he's going to eventually play well for us. And so even when they hit the bumps, you know, in September and October, there was still a confidence in him and the coaching staff stuck with him and the coaching staff kept working with him. And I remember talking to people there and they were like, one of the things that kind of kept coming up was, Do you remember that Aaron Rodgers was 10-14 in his first 24 starts here?
Yeah.
And it's true. You know, it's true. And it's so like, and that's not ancient history. That's 15 years ago that the Packers had patience with Aaron Rodgers and it obviously paid off. And so this is such a great, like, I don't know if we want to call it experiment, but that's sort of what it feels like. And like, the way a quarterback's developed and the way all this flipped. And I think you can actually look back at 2008 as the turning point when Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco had great rookie years. And if you look, I'm sure you've seen that chart that I'll tweet out sometimes on like when each quarterback, when each first round quarterback made his first start, and it flipped completely after 08. Like before that, it was normal to sit a guy for a year or two. Mm-hmm. Like after 08, it changed and it was like no one sat them anymore. And, you know, that's what's so fascinating about this is it's such an outlier compared to how quarterbacks are normally developed. And you really think about it, Connor, we have effectively given up on Trey Lance, on Zach Wilson, on Mac Jones, right? Jordan Love wasn't even starting at this point. At the point those guys are at in the middle of year three, Jordan Love wasn't even starting yet.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you?
It tells me that somebody who picked the Packers to win double-digit games this year is feeling pretty good. That's
You picked them double-digit wins, huh?
10 wins! And look, they're 6-6 right now, and here's the rest of the schedule. Giants, Monday Night Football.
Win.
Buccaneers, probably.
Probably, yeah. Tough Panther, one, but...
Panthers on Christmas Eve, win.
Boom. Yeah.
Vikings... I feel like they're better than the Vikings right now.
So 9-6 going into that Vikings game. And then what's the last one?
Bears.
Wow. I think you're there. I think they get in. They could be a team as frisky in that wild card round.
Everyone will remember me as the guy who picked the Patriots to win the AFC East this year. But there were so many other good things that I did, including picking the Jets, picking the Jets to miss the playoffs, picking the Bills to miss the playoffs, picking the Packers to make the playoffs. Just saying.
So this is like your how is the play otherwise, Mrs. Lincoln moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it's tough to make any kind of a sweeping indictment on Kansas City. I thought it was rich hearing their group complain about a lack of a pass interference call down the stretch. I mean, come on, guys. Let's read the room a little bit here. But at the end of it, okay, you're 8-4. No one in that division is going to catch you. At this point, it's still about developing Rashi Rice, right? Like every game's got to be a Rashi Rice game. This is a playoff preview. Mm-hmm. You need him to be adequate to elite by the time that the games really count.
I'd repeat what I've said before, which I think the Chiefs are kind of like the Patriots used to be, right?
Yeah,
like,
who cares?
Like they can use the season to develop what they needed to develop to like build the muscles that they need to build for the playoffs. And I don't know. Like, I think I personally look at it like if Rashi Rice like develops into a viable complement to Travis Kelce by the time you get to January, it's worth a loss or two.
Yeah.
Cause I don't think it even, the crazy thing is somebody's mentioned this to me yesterday. I didn't realize it. Patrick Mahomes has never played a road playoff game. Did you know that? I had no idea. I had no idea. It's pretty absurd. It's pretty absurd, but he's never played a road playoff game. But you know, like I don't doubt that team's capability to go on the road and win in the playoffs, you know, especially in an AFC that is Buffalo even going to make it? The Bengals aren't in the equation with Burrow down. Like the three superpowers in the AFC the last couple of years, the Chiefs are really the only one standing right now, right?
Right now, it would be Chiefs.
I kind of like the idea of the AFC title game in Miami, though. That'd be fun.
Oh, I know. Dolphins is a 1 seed, Ravens 2, Jaguars 3, Chiefs 4, Steelers 5, Colts 6, Browns 7. That's going to change. I think it'll end up being Steelers, possibly Colts, Texans. You know, maybe Steelers, Colts, Texans.
This is a good we all don't know crap moment, too, because how about that mighty AFC?
I know.
I mean, you have like Mitch Trubisky and Joe Flacco in the playoffs right now, don't you?
Oh, my God. I want to pivot just real quick because there's one more game. The only other game that I think is really, I mean, we'll get to Lions Saints. We'll get to Broncos Texans. But I do want to bring up the Chargers and the Patriots while we're here because, okay, the Chargers win 6-0. Big deal. They don't score. The complaints vacillate if you're a Chargers fan. And I still haven't seen one out in the wild. I don't know if actually a real Chargers fan
exists. Did you see what I tweeted yesterday, though? It seemed like there's a, I don't know if it's another Boltman or maybe a rival of Boltman. A couple of people pointed out that it was like that Thanos character, right?
Oh.
Did you see that?
No. Is it another fake fan that is also a Vikings fan?
I don't know, but like, well, we just talked about how miserable the conditions were in Foxborough. So somehow this guy who was dressed up as like the sequel to Bolt Man was in the crowd in Foxborough yesterday. Really? Let me see if I can find it and send it to you. There he is. I am going to send now, everybody listening to the pod, this may sound like bad podcasting because I'm delaying a little bit here and stalling, but I'm actually
the Mike Francesa.
Yeah, I'm texting Connor the post so we can get his live reaction.
This is good. All you people on YouTube, you watch the Connor Orb reacts to, not you, but wow. Look at this. It's impressive. the woman
you think
that's
it's a plant?
Yes. Although yes, because all right, here's an automatic tell. All so this guy, I'm going to describe it. It looks like if you made your kid shoulder pads out of like a styrofoam box that your refrigerator came in, like the styrofoam, and then you painted it crudely Chargers colors, and then you got the helmet from it looks like Starship Troopers a little bit. Also painted in Chargers colors, and then he's got the whole thing autographed by a bunch of random Chargers players. Like I see a number 9. Looks like Justin Herbert's right there on the collarbone. So he's
I didn't even notice that before.
He has to have some access. So my guess is that this guy is probably just like the VP of ticket sales, you know, mm-hmm. and they just send him out there. They're just like, please make it look like there's just somebody who cares.
He is a passionate enough Chargers fan to be at a game at the location that he's furthest away in the NFL from Los Angeles. Right.
And it's not like it's a tourist. You know, you can't be like, come on, honey, let's hop on a plane
Let's not say things we can't take back about beautiful Massachusetts here.
Yeah, but like Foxborough is not Boston.
Right. So, and he's
you take
he's
your
there.
Wife out there on a plane and then you end up in a Motel 6 in Natick.
And he's
what
there,
do you think she's going to say to you?
Don't bash Natick. I spent a lot of years. I spent a lot of years walking the corridors at the Natick Mall. I actually grew up like right down the street from Natick, a couple towns.
Did you really?
Over. Oh yeah. Yeah. A couple towns over. Like, so growing up in Sudbury, you did all your shopping as a kid in Framingham and Natick, and you had Shoppers World in Framingham, which is now defunct or turned into a strip mall. And then you had the Natick Mall, which was okay at first. Then they tore it down and built a new Natick Mall, which for a short time was called the Natick Collection. So yes, I've good knowledge of Natick from my childhood. But so this guy is clear across the country, like as far at the location furthest away, right from Los Angeles within the NFL in a driving rainstorm and 35 degree temperature.
Yeah. I mean,
I love the Chargers.
No, nobody loves the Chargers. Nobody. There aren't Chargers fans. It's just not a thing. And can I tell you my Natick story real quick?
Yes.
We're at the Natick.
I'm just glad that you pronounce it correctly, because a lot of people I've heard who aren't from there call it Natick when they're talking about Doug Flutie, because that's where Doug Flutie's from.
Oh, I didn't know that. We're staying in Natick before the 2009 NCAA Lacrosse Championships, Syracuse and Cornell. One of the great games, double overtime. Cody Jamison scored at the buzzer, I think, to force overtime.
Was there a Powell on that team or no? Was that post?
We were done with them by then. No. Okay. So we were staying in a Motel 6 or a Travelodge or something like that on the side of the highway in Natick. And
I bet I know. It was a Red Roof Inn.
Yes, that's what it was.
Yes, I know that Red Roof Inn.
You know, okay, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay.
Yep.
So there are three of us from the student newspaper that were there. No money. And so we're just hanging out, drinking in the room. And there's two beds. And we have two guys and a girl. So we need a third bed. So we called this basically non-existent front desk 11 times. Nobody picks up. And we finally get somebody to pick up the phone. And I say, excuse me, sir, we need a cot in room like 1120. Yep. And the guy goes, a what? And I said, we need a cot in room 1120. And the guy goes, I have no idea what you're talking about, dude. And I was like, a cot. And then I was like a bed, like a cot. And then the guy goes, sorry, dude. And he hangs up the phone. And so I call again. And again, we've been drinking for a little bit, right? And so, and I'm going to butcher it. I had a better accent at the time. But I called back and I was like, hey, buddy, we need a cot in room, we need a cot in room 1120. And the guy goes, yeah, no problem. I'll be right up. Nope. And delivered a cot. Knew exactly what I was talking about. And I was like, we are in the lost world, man. This is, I don't know where.
Which you like gave him like the Goodwill Hunting accent?
Yeah, but like, I feel
which
like Natick is
hate
like,
that movie because it makes people think that everybody from here has that don't. Accent. It's not true.
They don't.
No, it's not true. It's very,
so it's just that guy.
It's localized. And it's like, it's very localized to certain parts of the Boston area.
I'll also give you my,
which I think is probably true of Jersey too, right? Like not people, there are a ton of people from Jersey who don't sound like freaking Tony Sperano.
God rest. No, don't bring Tony Sperano in this. God rest his soul.
Sperano. I meant Soprano. Yeah.
Yeah, there's, so I come from Scranton, right? And the Associated Press recently did a poll. I think it was 2 years ago, and we were voted the ugliest accent in America. And we beat out Pittsburgh. And I've said this about the Scranton accent forever. And I'm sure that people who are from the area that listen to the podcast can pick up on it a little bit. I have like little twinges of it, but I have beaten it to death. And that's a choice. You have a choice to sound like you have a grasp on the English language. You do. Or you can talk like you're Ben Affleck from The Departed. You have that's a choice. And you're making that choice every day. You can wake up one day and say, okay, I'm not in the town anymore. I'm not putting on a hockey mask and robbing a bank. You know, I'm just a normal, upstanding member of Boston society. That's a choice. And you're just declining to make it. And so I tell that to everybody. They're just like, oh, Scranton accent's terrible. That's right. That's why I dragged it out of me. I threw it on the highway and I ran it over with my car on the way
out there. I do think about this sometimes though, because so there are people obviously around me who have that accent, right? And so like I hear them talk and then I see their kids who, you know, are around my kids and they're like, whatever, 7, 8 years old, and they don't sound like that. So are they going to eventually sound like that? Like, I don't know. it's a weird byproduct for me of having kids. It's like, I don't think any of the little like 7 and 8, 9 year olds have accents. So like, when exactly do you acquire the accent?
Here was the ultimate litmus test. For
true
me.
Though, isn't it?
Like, yes.
Your kids probably aren't like preschool with a bunch of kids who are like walking around talking like Tony Soprano, right?
If you wake up every morning and there's two paths in your room, and to the left, it's I want to sound like Snooki today. To the right is I want to sound like everyone else can understand me.
I don't know why this is killing me now, but it's something I honestly I've never said out loud. I've been thinking about it for like
I don't know how we got here, by the way.
I've been thinking about this for like the last 2 years. I don't know why it's coming up now. But I have these friends with thick Boston accents and their kids are 7, 8, 9 years old.
Wake up every morning.
You don't have it. So it's like, when the hell do you get the accent?
You make a choice every day. And here's I'll tell you why. It is my number one litmus test for this, right? So my mom is she's like a language, I don't know how you would say it. Like if my mom is around someone with a Southern accent, she will just develop a Southern accent. And it's like one of those things that I think it's in your brain that you can't help. And if I'm talking to someone from the South, I will accidentally do like a bad Brian Kelly Southern accent, you know, like my family, you know, I'll do that. Yeah. But I had a sister who moved to London and is, you know, it does not sound like, you know, Prince or whatever, Queen Camilla. You throw her in that environment and she sounds like she's always sounded. You know what I mean?
Okay, so if you listen to me talk, where would you say I'm from?
Like anywhere in like Iowa, you know, or like
that's the thing is like
Ohio,
I don't, like,
you know.
No, like, all right, so I grew up in Boston. I have a Midwestern father, and my dad like doesn't so much anymore, but like you get like the certain words where he sounds like he's from Detroit, right? Like, and okay. his family from Detroit, they have that, like the, like, you know, like the Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, like the pseudo like Canadian Midwestern accent, the Great Lakes accent, right? And then my mom is Austrian. So, and she still like sounds Austrian, like not as strong probably as from when she first got
in,
here.
Born in Austria.
Born in Austria, right.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like I like grew up like speaking like my mom, you know, and I don't right, really like sound like my dad either.
I don't know. So, what like, does an Austrian accent sound like?
Like, I don't know. Like, it's just like, I don't know why this is bothering me, why this has bothered me for so much. Like, now I feel like I'm in therapy because I've held this inside for 2 years.
But it feels like, good, doesn't it?
It sure does. Like, I don't know. It's like why, like, I want to know when kids acquire the Boston accent. Like, when does that
They
happen?
Do when they wake up one day and they decide that it's fun to sound that way. And there's no doubt because when I've lived in New Jersey now for 11 years. And if I am around all of my in-laws and we're down at the shore and we're having a good time, I can find myself sliding into the vernacular. And it is a lot of fun to sound that way for a little bit. And then when you realize that your kids are watching you and they imitate everything that you're doing, I snap out of it because I don't want to sound that way because it's a choice that you make. But anyway, wow. Poor Charger guy took a drive by and then we just throttled the Boston accent. Wow.
I mean, I will legitimately say that this is like kind of like a thing for me too, because of when I went to college. I went to college like right after Good Will Hunting was released, and every goddamn time I told somebody, every goddamn time I went out in college in Ohio, and I told somebody I was from Boston, I had to answer that freaking question: why don't you sound like that?
Yeah,
because no one I grew up with sounds like that.
Nobody.
And anyway. I don't understand how anybody sounds like that based on my anecdotal evidence that I've gathered over the last 2 years of watching my kid and his kids and their friends.
This is a very long way of saying that I think the Chargers can make a run for it in the AFC. Oh, my God.
And now I got this image of Boltman showing up at that hearing for whatever that was, like.
Probably talking in a fake Boston accent because he went there for the weekend and decided it was fun to sound that way.
Oh, God.
The Chargers.
We should probably get this back on the tracks.
Yeah. The Chargers are funny to me because, and this is the only point I really have to make on the Chargers, is that you're Brandon Staley, right? And you get there and you're like, the defense is terrible. And he's like, okay, the run defense specifically is awful. Staley's like, got it. Moves the run defense from like 32nd in EPA to like 15th. All right. Passing defense is terrible. Yep. Okay. I'm going to go get JC Jackson. He ends up being a complete disaster. My bad. Now we start getting the passing defense up just a little bit. Now you shut out the Patriots, which is not hard to do. And then the offense is terrible and there's no winning if you're this guy. But I do think that the one thing that could happen, you're 5-7 right now. You're third in the division. I don't see a way that they can't get white hot here. They've had the Broncos twice. Maybe the Broncos hot streak is over. You have the Raiders. You have the Bills 2 days before Christmas. And then you finish the season with the Chiefs. By then, the Chiefs might be resting Patrick Mahomes. Might not matter for them. And they might want the Chargers in the playoffs.
Yeah, 3-2 is reasonable, which will put them at 8-9. Would they get in?
Right now,
I don't know. I mean, we talked earlier about how the AFC unexpectedly sucks. So,
yeah, I don't know. Just saying, it's possible. I'm not ready to give up on them yet because there are stretches where they look like the best team in football.
I mean, because you like look at it, right? Like, so you have the Steelers with Mitch Trubisky, you have the Colts with Gardner Minshew, you have the Browns with Joe Flacco.
Like any of those teams could fall apart at any minute.
And you have the Texans with CJ Stroud. I have more faith in the Texans than I do the other three right now.
There's no doubt in my mind. I
like the Texans, like I said earlier, the Texans are sort of like that team that like whenever they're on TV, I want to watch them, you know? But they had a tough injury yesterday too, and losing Tank Dell. I mean, it's just amazing, like, how we looked at this conference like 3 months ago, and we're like, my God, like the 9th or 10th best team is going to be like a playoff quality team. And, you know, you just look at it, and it's, I mean, Jake Browning's the quarterback of the Bengals, and they are a game and a half out, right? Like, if they win tonight somehow, they'll be a game out of the last playoff spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Jake Browning as a quarterback.
Good God. Let's hope not. So you mentioned the Texans and the Broncos. I wanted to get to that one. I thought what stood out to me, and you've been on this, and you know, I credit to you, but and really all Texans fans who have been exhausted, I think, a little bit by the CJ Stroud hype, when they're all kind of saying what I wrote yesterday, and I know you've been writing a lot, which is like, hey, dude, Will Anderson is really good. And now Derek Stingley, I think, has taken that move to elite corner. I think he has five. They did the side-by-side of the amount of games that Derek Stingley has had, and he has five interceptions versus Sauce Gardner at that time had two. Sauce, though, I think was clearly being ignored and avoided by that point, so I think those numbers are a little bit skewed. But Stingley got tested yesterday and came up big. The first pick was a tip ball, but that second one down the seam with Courtland Sutton, he jumped like 30 feet in the air to grab that thing. That was unbelievable. He is skyrocketing.
Yeah, and I've always, like, I sort of hold on to things with guys like that, like, where it's like you hear things about them when they're young, and generally, like, a lot of times they wind up being true. And with him, I can remember, you remember like the great LSU team, right? With Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, right? So Derek Stingley was a true freshman starting at corner on that team. And I remember talking to a scout who's high up with one of these organizations now, saying to me that year, the coaches there are telling people Derek Stingley is the best player on the team.
Yeah.
which sounds like nuts. But you think about that, like, if they're willing to say that about an 18-year-old Derek Stingley, when you have Jefferson and Chase and Burrow and Edwards-Helaire and Patrick Queen and Grant Delpit and, like, all these different guys in that roster, right? Like, if you're willing to say that about Derek, like, there must be something there. And, you know, I think it's, you know, a good example of the Texans doing a good job of scouting guys, you know, and being able to cut through everything with him. And he had a really funky end to his college career, but no one really, like, there were very few people that thought going into the process he was going to wind up being the third overall pick.
Right.
And there were some character questions with him, the same way there were some questions on CJ Stroud. And I think the Texans were effectively able to cut through a lot of that and get to the truth, which is a tricky thing, because a lot of times I feel like 90% of the time, the character concern question, like, it's true. It usually winds up being true. And it usually winds up coming true in the pros, right? Teams that are really good at this are able to take the quote unquote dice rolls and wind up being right on them because they're doing the best research, because they have the best information. And I think the Texans, you don't hear a lot of people crediting their scouting department for what's going on right now. I think their scouting department deserves a lot of credit for what's going on right now, because you're seeing a team that's got a lot of good young players, that's fitting what D'Amico Ryans is building, and that really looks like it's on the way up. And that game yesterday was won by the defense. It wasn't won by CJ was good, but it wasn't won by CJ at the end. It was won by the defense. And it's Stingley making the pick. It's Jimmy Ward coming up in the end, who's another nice signing, a guy they brought over from San Francisco with D'Amico. You know, like, that's a team that, I said this last week, I think, on the show, right? Like, Texans Jaguars could wind up becoming a really important game over the next few years. And it sounds weird, but, you know, they've split this year, and we'll see who winds up winning the division. But I think for years to come, that could wind up being a very, very important game in the AFC.
For sure. I thought that was a good kind of gut check win for them, because Stroud wasn't spectacular. I mean, he was good. He was fine. He's still miles ahead of every other, you know, he's still miles ahead of every other quarterback that was
drafted. And they lose Tank Dell in game, which is a blow.
You lose Tank Dell. Nico Collins has 9 receptions for 191 yards. But I flash back to, you know, so there was the
Man, he's been great too. Nico Collins has really been great.
So good. There was the Derek Stingley pick, and then there was, so like the last 4.5 minutes of that game, Will Anderson doesn't make a sack, but he's double teamed on almost every snap. He's in the backfield on almost every snap. He's flushing Wilson out of the pocket in almost every snap. There was the 4th and 1 that Samaje Perine picked up that Will Anderson was through the line and had him by the ankles in the backfield. He almost ended that game with like 3 minutes to go. He is the 4th most double teamed edge rusher in the NFL.
Crazy. Is he really?
Yeah. And earlier this season, it was higher. He was just behind Micah Parsons and Myles Garrett. So it's dropped a little bit. That's wild. And I think that if you're talking about the core tenets of a team, shut down corner on an affordable contract, shut down edge on an affordable contract, shut down quarterback on an affordable contract, it's not ridiculous for me to think that next year we could have the Texans pegged as kind of like a wild card Super Bowl contender.
You know,
because that's when it happens.
It would be,
you know?
Do you remember back in the day when Dr. Z, I remember back in the day as an avid Sports Illustrated reader, I loved when the football previews came out, right? The college football preview, the NFL preview.
Yeah.
And I feel like Dr. Z always had this habit of picking the team, because he'd always do the Super Bowl picks preseason for people who don't know. And he would always have a habit of picking the up and coming team that you didn't really expect him to. And like, I have it in my head for some reason, like the 95 Browns were an example of that, right? Like even more recently, I think Peter did it with like the 07 Dolphins. And I'm not trying to curse them with those two bad examples of teams that didn't hit, but it does feel like they're going to be that team next year, right? Like coming out of this year, we'll see if they make the playoffs. Maybe they win a game when they get to the playoffs, maybe not, but they're going to be the team that we're going to be hyping up in July and August. And their training camp is going to be a destination for people. Mm-hmm. You look at the result of the Deshaun Watson trade now, and the fact that you've gotten, you know, good offensive lineman in Kenyon Green and then Will Anderson and CJ Stroud out of it. Now you did have to give up a pick, an extra pick to get Will Anderson. But, you know, like the fact that that's the result of like how of the capital, it's pretty impressive.
Sorry, Texans fans, by the way, on draft night, I thought that was the absolute worst idea ever. And I was wrong. So,
Will Anderson, you're saying trading up for Will Anderson?
Yeah, but it wasn't just me either. You know, like,
I also wonder, like, do you think like Will Anderson's a good example of like NFL people overthinking it? Like, this is a guy who is a superstar at Alabama, not just a good player, a superstar at Alabama. Because, and a lot of people I talked to thought he didn't have that high a ceiling because of his length.
Right.
Like, well, he's a really great player, but he's maybe not quite as tall as you want, not quite as long as you'd want at that position. Is it an example of NFL people not just, you know what, the guy's just a freak show of a football player.
Yeah.
And every time he goes out there, he dominates. You know, I can remember hearing people saying last year, and this is people I talked to that work for teams, not on like Twitter or whatever. you know, like, but I remember people saying to me like, oh yeah, the other edge at Bama is better. That's Dallas Turner, who's probably going to be a top 10 pick this year, right? But it's like, you kind of think about it, like, really? Like, Willie Anderson had like 14 sacks as a true sophomore. He was playing as a true freshman on one of the best Alabama teams in history, right, in 2020. Had 14 sacks, I think it was, or 17 sacks maybe as a true sophomore, and then was double-teamed the entire year, you know, last year. So did everybody just overthink it on Will Anderson?
Yeah.
It's just like, at some point, it's just like, just take the best player.
Yeah.
He was the best player. You know, like, he was the best player at Alabama. Just take the best player.
It's, you know, we fall back on the data because it's easy to explain, right? It's easy to sell. But oftentimes, you know, for example, with Will Anderson, it'd be like, listen, I'm not taking an edge that doesn't have X wingspan, you know? And there are so many examples of that where it just, you end up looking ridiculous.
I think like Nick Bosa is another one. Nick Bosa is not 6'6", you know? I mean, if you want to go back in history, you can look at the Dwight Freeneys and the Robert Matheses and all of that. But it's just, you know, like there's that saying, like if you make an exception, you wind up with a team full of them. The guys who are really good at this understand which exceptions you take.
Right.
And you make, you know, and Will Anderson's certainly an exception based on the way he played at Alabama. And now the way he's played for the Texans, I mean, certainly stands out as an exception. With hindsight, we all have hindsight now, that everybody should have been willing to take.
Lightning round time. I want one sentence on the rest of these games. Lions Saints. Give me Taysom Hill the rest of the way.
Yep.
Just right. Like I'm
lots
done.
Of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm done. I think everybody's kind of done with Derek Carr. I don't know.
Yeah. My Lions Saints takeaway: the Lions rookie class has a chance to be what like the 17 Saints rookie class was, if you remember. Dan Campbell was there for that, where that was the Lattimore, Marcus Williams, Ryan Ramczyk, Alvin Kamara, Alex Anzalone, Trey Hendrickson. That was that class, right? Between Brian Branch, Jahmyr Gibbs, Jack Campbell, Sam Laporta, like that class has a chance to be that sort of class for the Lions. And you got to get, again, like this is one of those things, credit to Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes. They sort of ignored the positional value thing and just said, we're just going to take the best players. And it's worked out for them.
It's always just take the best players. You figure it out. Unless you're the Falcons, which is the next one we'll get to. Falcons, take a quarterback at some point.
You know what's funny about that, though, Connor?
Just unwatchable.
Connor, you know what's funny about that, though, is like I feel like the theory on what they're doing is correct.
It is. In
it's
theory,
you don't sell out for a guy that you're not all in right. on. Right. In practice, it's just like how much time can you buy yourself to get that position right?
Could you imagine? I mean, they were the first team that came right out and said, nope, we're not interested in Lamar Jackson. And who knows, right? There will be a 30 for 30 on that negotiation window at some point in our lives. That, I mean, imagine, wouldn't you have rather had Lamar Jackson than Bijan Robinson right now?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been, yeah. I mean, the idea of Lamar, of Arthur Smith building an offense for
Lamar
Jackson.
Kyle Pitts.
Yeah,
Drake London. Todd Monken wouldn't have even had to have left Georgia. He could have come right into your office. That game, 13-8.
Again, God bless those.
I know.
People who were in those stands at the Meadowlands.
Makes me glad I'm no longer a Jets beat writer. Just for
well, you,
like
well, you would have been behind a pane of glass with a full buffet, so I think you would have been okay.
That's true. Chicken fingers with as many dipping sauces as you can drum up at halftime. That was always the play. Colts 31, Titans 28.
I was doing my column last night, and I said, I don't think this is even that hot a take. Shane Steichen, coach of the year. And then I saw editor Mitch type it in. It's actually a take Connor Orr had last week.
Yeah, a take that. SI was first. As SI first taked.
First Shane and Steichen. Second.
Yeah.
First and,
first and second take. I have a fun story for you off air about that, by the way. But I compared him head to head to D'Amico Ryans, and there's no offense to D'Amico Ryans, but the Colts have been going through it. I mean, the Jonathan Taylor thing was a mess. They cut Shaq Leonard. Like half of their team is out. Anthony Richardson isn't playing. They had one of their top corners suspended and then cut for gambling. Like this is a wild offseason. And yeah. Jim Irsay's your owner. You don't know what that guy's going to do. He's going to walk into the building one day and just decide to, you know, make Carson Wentz.
Well, all of a sudden, he makes a comment on Real Sports in like November of your first year as a coach.
Yeah. Like he's just, you know what? I actually like Jeff Saturday.
That you've been profiled as a white billionaire.
But yeah, so good for Shane Steichen. He is, he's getting through it. I'll say that. Yeah. Cardinals Steelers.
Oof. I love that Kyler Murray is now playing the Cardinals out of position to get his successor, potentially.
Hilarious.
I think it's a fun storyline to follow because I think it's very rare that somebody has their future in their hands that way. In fact, like, you can't even say that about Justin Fields in Chicago, right? Because, like, that they have the Panthers pick. So he can win seven games. He can get the Bears to six or seven wins, and it won't matter because the Bears are still going to probably have the first pick in the draft. With the Cardinals, it's different. Kyler can play them out of position to take his replacement, which I think is a really interesting subplot to all of this. But Jonathan Gannon's team continues to play hard. Man, I don't know. The Steelers, it's just the offense hits the roadblocks again. And, you know, now Kenny Pickett's out for, it sounds like an extended period. It sounds like maybe this was a high ankle sprain. You know, are they going to struggle to get to like nine wins? You know,
speaking of choices that we all make, Mitch Trubisky was a choice, you know, like that was a choice that you made. Pittsburgh. Like, you know, there were some good backups once upon a time.
Well, would you rather have like Mike White or yes. Cooper Rush? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. Mike White, Cooper Rush, Teddy Bridgewater. Let's see. Colt McCoy, who's still available. You could have him now if you wanted to. Let me think of who else. Josh Dobbs, obviously.
Flacco.
Tyrod Taylor, Joe Flacco, Jacoby Brissett. Who else? If Josh McCown
could have traded for Bailey Zappe.
Josh McCown's available. You could have him right now. Give me Josh McCown. He could still sling it.
I think he has come coach. In and like late in the season before to save teams. So that's sort of his wheelhouse.
Absolutely. Dolphins, Commanders. The only thing I thought that was funny about this was, and I don't know if Tyreek just consistently has Tua's back or if this is a true story, but someone said that on his one of his super long touchdowns, they tweeted it was one of the worst deep balls they've ever seen. Tyreek just completely gets under it. And Tyreek's actually, no.
I was talking to Wes Welker after the game, right? His receivers coach. Everybody knows Wes from his playing days. He called that a Willie Mays Hayes catch.
It's amazing. But Tyreek is saying, actually, Tua threw it to the spot that was prearranged. I was just kind of lost out there, and I'm also the fastest human being on planet Earth, and so I can just get under it. Ball
it's amazing
tracking,
how he continually gets behind people.
It's amazing. I was talking to a scout.
No matter, like the other team is telling a professional free safety, a professional corner, do not let this person get behind you.
And you can't. Can't do it.
He keeps getting behind him.
Don't possess the ability to do it. Yeah, I remember talking to a guy who was an NFL scout, not an NFL scout anymore, but just about how you, like, the difficulty in gauging a guy's ball tracking ability. And Tyreek is the best maybe that there's ever been. And he's like half the size of Will Fuller, right? And who was another guy that you would look at and be like, okay, that's a great ball tracker, you know?
In all seriousness, like, you know, what Wes told me that was really interesting about how Tyreek continues to get behind defenses was he said the reason why is because he's a really smart football player and he runs the whole route tree. So you cannot just play back on him.
Right.
Because if you play back off, if you back way off of him, he's going to get the ball underneath and outrun everybody anyway.
Right.
So you can't not defend that. He's like, now, if he didn't run his full route tree, you could probably play off and, you know, bracket, all that different stuff. But because of the things that he can do underneath to you, like that basically weaponizes his ability to get behind you, which I thought was really interesting because a lot of people don't look at him as being, a lot of people just look at him as just being fast when he's actually worked himself into becoming a very complete receiver.
Yeah. And you'd almost rather, right?
He's got an MVP case?
I do, but I'm, you know, and, all right, so and, I had especially some, I, this year
I,
too, right?
I got roasted by this, for this by Tuanon, but I tweeted out a coach that a quote that an assistant GM gave me that was basically like he had voted in my midseason poll for Tyreek, and I asked him to explain it, and he said, the best way I can explain it is this. If you're playing the Dolphins, who would you rather face? a Dolphins team without Tyreek or a Dolphins team without Tua? And his answer was, I'd rather face the Dolphins without Tua, which, yeah, of course, opened the social media floodgates for me when I tweeted that out. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I think if there was going to be a year where there were players outside of the quarterback position who have a case, I mean, I think Tyreek and AJ Brown are probably two guys that would have a legitimate one this year. And maybe Christian McCaffrey too. Although the problem with McCaffrey is there's so many great players on that team,
right,
that it's just like, you know, can you single one out?
It's like, what would the 49ers be without Christian McCaffrey? Whatever.
Pretty good.
Not 9-3. Yeah.
They went to two NFC title games without him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
within the last 5 years. So I think they'd be okay.
They probably still have Deebo Samuel playing running back, and everything would be relatively fine. Buccaneers, Panthers. Here's my one liner. Just wait. The Panthers are a gersh darn mess right now. And mm-hmm. That's all I'm going to say. It's worse than you think. If you think it's bad, it's worse.
So I think everything is right now pointed for the Panthers towards maybe a pretty thorough reset. And that's mm-hmm. not like based on someone flat out telling me that, but in reading the tea leaves here, they didn't promote Ejiro Evero to interim coach, and they promoted Chris Tabor instead. To me, what that signals is that the owner wants to reset. And that he's afraid of getting into a situation where the team gets hot and he doesn't have the chance to conduct that reset. Because remember last year they went through it where they got hot under Steve Wilks late in the year. And so I think for David Tepper, this is about getting to the finish line and being in position to change a lot of things in the organization. And so I don't think this is actively tanking. But I also think that there's some feeling like, let's just make sure that we are in position to start over in a lot of different ways when we get to January 8th.
He's not going to have a great time having to pay a first-time head coach a second contract in terms of salary and years. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If you want Ben Johnson, that's going to be like a six-year contract. Like that's, you know, it's going to be like a D'Amico contract. It's going to be like 6 years, right. $10 million. Like you're going to have to give them the Matt Rhule deal, you know?
Well, you have to though. And it's like, I mean, to me, it's one of the consequences. It's like a natural consequence of this, you know, like of all of this, because it's like, it's the Niners, you know, when they hired Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and they gave both those guys 6 year deals. It was because you had the, you know, very public like acrimony with Jim Harbaugh and then 1 year runs with Jim Tomsula and Chip Kelly. And so it wasn't even to attract the coach so much as it was to signal to the organization, we're going to stick with these guys. But then again, like he gave Matt Rhule, what, a 7 year deal?
662, I think it was.
Huh?
I think it was 6 years and 62 million.
I think it was seven.
Was it?
I think it was seven. I think look it up, but I think it was a 7 year deal. And that didn't mean a whole lot in the end.
Google machine.
I think it was 63 over seven. I didn't look it up.
760. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Man. Good for him. And then he cashed in at that Nebraska money. Why would you even coach? You just get I just keep getting myself fired, you know? Man. That would be awesome. You're just done. We talked about that.
Living the dream, yep.
Just living the dream. Browns, Rams. I mean, I love seeing Joe Flacco in the NFL. I think Joe Flacco always belongs in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But Cleveland.
Joe Flacco, by the way, now playing, so he's officially outlasted Matt Ryan, his draft classmate.
Wow.
Well, I don't know. I probably shouldn't say that so definitively yet, right? Like, because I guess Matt Ryan could come out of the broadcast booth, but
I thought, you know, they stretched the field with him a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's by far your best option, you know?
Yep.
I would guess that maybe if you had Joe Flacco and Nick Chubb, I would have some degree of confidence that you could make a run here, but you also run head on into a Rams team that's playing really well. I think has figured things out offensively. Matt Stafford looked really good. You know, the gambler in me since I gave a lot of people advice to take the Rams on the over on the 6.5 win total this year. I'm feeling pretty good about that. So, you know, I'm rooting for the Rams.
I put the Rams in that category with the Texans, with the Packers, which I think they're really going to be on the upswing going into 2024. They've got about $75 million in cap space, so that's what they're expecting to have. They're going to have a first-round pick for the first time in like a generation, right?
They should trade it.
Maybe they will. Maybe they will. Should. But they have options. They have options. You know what I mean? Like they can make moves, and they've got some flexibility, and they've got some young players in the roster now. Like, I don't know how many people are paying attention to like what Byron Young is doing at outside linebacker for them, but it seems like they hit on one there. Obviously, Puka Nacua has been great on offense. You know, like Kyron Williams played well for them. Their offensive line's getting better, so it seems like the Rams are going to be this team that, especially with LA as a selling point to free agents or trade targets, like they could get right back to where they were pretty fast if Stafford can maintain his level of play for the next few years.
That is it for the games. If you, Albert, if you're the college football playoff committee and you're in charge of making a four-team NFL playoff right now for the Super Bowl,
ooh,
what are you doing? You're doing that.
I like this. Hold on.
You're doing the 49ers.
All right, hold on. Like, should I do my reveal the way that they did it on the show? Wasn't it they announced 1, 2, and 3, right? And then they announced 6, right?
Oh. So,
right, and then they announced 4. Like that was the way they did it. Though they did 1, 2, 3.
What was Florida State?
5.
5? Ah. Oh.
Yeah.
God.
So
why would you do that?
All right. So I'm just like I'm looking at it right now. Okay. So my number one seed would be the San Francisco 49ers.
Yes.
My number two seed would be the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
My number three seed would be the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
At 6, just like the college football committee had the defending champion at 6. I'm doing this off the top of my head. At 6, we have the defending champion, Kansas City Chiefs, just like the college football committee had the defending champion, Georgia Bulldogs in that spot, right?
Wow.
So now we're left with 4 and 5. So 1 is Niners, 2 is Eagles, 3 is Ravens, right? At number 5, I have the Dolphins.
Oh, you're going to do it to Florida? Like you're just, Governor Rick Scott, Governor Rick Scott is investigating the BCS, by the way, Albert. Now he's going to look at you too. He's going to come after you.
And at number 4, I'm going to give America what it's want. The Dallas Cowboys get in.
Oh, my God. Could
you imagine? The Dallas Cowboys get in. So
it's like all the years that Notre Dame made the college football playoff, and everyone's like, why?
So, So we got Cowboys, Niners, and the Rose Bowl in the semifinal. And then we have we'll have the Ravens and the Eagles in the Sugar Bowl in the semifinal. How about that?
Damn. It's good. That's good.
I feel bad leaving the Lions out. I think the Lions probably deserve a little more respect than I gave them. I put a Chiefs team that has a worse record than them ahead of them. But
yeah, just make sure we'll clip this on social at Albert Breer.
These are all so tough choices. Yeah. Like people in Michigan don't hate me enough already.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening for another week. As always, the Thursday show with Matt and Gilberto, well worth your time. Give it a rating and review. Let us know what you think. It helps other people find the MMQB podcast, which is on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's wherever you're looking. That is Albert Breer. He's the best, and we're going to be back next week, week 14. We're almost there. We'll see you guys soon.